This is Danny and Dusty.
It's not your problem, Doc. You don't have to mix up in this.
That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
Go ahead. Go ahead, skin it. Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm your huckleberry.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on a Tuesday afternoon, whether you're listening on 1080 AM. My mic not liking me one bit. Watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday afternoon. It is Tuesday afternoon. It is a little after 2 o'clock, which means time for three up, three down, three things we liked, three things we didn't, coming out of the NFL weekend that was. Senor Dusty, what did you like coming out of this weekend?
Lions mauling the Jaguars. That's my first up. Jared Goff, after five interceptions the week before and still getting a win over the Houston Texans, he rebounded with a perfect passer rating. Perfection from Jared Goff. Also, threw for 400 yards. It's his fifth perfect passer rating. It's the second game he's had with the perfect passer rating, but it's the fifth time this year he's had a completion percentage of over 80% on the week. Five times this year. Jared Goff had a stinker, and I jinxed the hell out of him by we need to put more respect on his name. He was flawless in that route against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And everybody could say, oh, but it's the Jags. And I don't care who it is, because if it was just the Jags, everybody would do it against the Jaguars every week. It is really damn hard to do what they are doing and what he did in that game.
Did you feel like that they were trying to maybe get Jared Goff an MVP there?
In that game? I don't know. No.
It felt like they were trying to jack up the stats a little bit.
No, because of the fact he had five interceptions the week before. That'll do you in.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I felt like they were trying to we're going to reduce that.
A five interception game can take you out of that race.
Pretty quick.
Way more than beating the blood out of the Jaguars does.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
My first up, the Steelers are for real. No, seriously. The Steelers are for real. And they are. Like we thought, oh, they'd be a cute little fun plucky team. Are they really going to be there in the end? Well, then they put the clamps on Lamar Jackson said, we're better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wanted to sit there and say that the Ravens were a team you could see going to the AFC Championship game. If you can see the Ravens going, you should be able to see the Steelers going. Because as good as the Ravens are offensively, that Steelers team, they're better built for the playoffs. Run the ball, play defense.
They don't have a quarterback that can win them a game, though.
Well, the Ravens got a quarterback that can win them a game, and he got put in handcuffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the thing. Is like, this Steelers defense might actually be that thing we've kind of talked about. Is can you be successful in the NFL today? Can your defense be good enough?
Yes, but to win in the playoffs, you need that quarterback.
I don't disagree, but I think the Steelers might be the test case for this.
If I were to put them in front of Buffalo or Kansas City in a playoff game,
I would not.
I'm not going with.
But,
and that's what it's going to take to get to a conference championship game.
If I told you they upset either one of them, though, would you be entirely shocked?
No, but I would be surprised.
Sure, but I mean, I think that's, again, that's the test case for them this year.
I mean, a lot of things can break every which way in a football game and in the NFL.
And I think they might be a team that can cause things to break.
Not with Russell Wilson.
No, I mean, on the defense.
I know, but
on the
not
defense
with,
side of the ball. No, not offensively. No.
The Van Ginkle Vikings are my number two.
You love saying Van Ginkle.
Two sacks against the Titans. Mm-hmm. He now has eight sacks on the year and two pick sixes.
Ooh.
There's only two other players in NFL history that have had eight sacks and two pick sixes in a season.
That's pretty good.
Terrell Suggs and Jason Taylor. And now, Andrew Van Ginkle, everybody.
When you talk about Suggs and Taylor, are those maybe two of the most slept-on physical freaks in the history of this game?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because they played in an era where they were absolute monsters. But, you know, Jason Taylor's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Suggs will be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are going to get their shine, but, like, Suggs was never even the best player on his own defense.
Was Taylor?
Yeah, I think he was better than Zach Thomas.
Okay. Again, but, like, I think that's kind of underscored. Like, they played in the linebacker era.
Suggs was, like, the third best player on his defense.
Big time Ray and Ed.
Ed Reed, Ray Lewis. both pretty good.
Was Rod playing then too?
I think Rod Woodson gone. Was out.
Okay, yeah. So he's third. Well, Helody was on that team, so he might have been fourth.
Yeah.
God, what an embarrassment of riches. All right, my second up. Correcting mistakes and admitting faults. Thank you, Indianapolis Colts, for saying no to Joe Flacco.
Yeah, thank
and going
you.
With Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
Yeah, beyond winning the game, no duh.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. You are chasing Cowboys-level rhetoric of like, well, he gives us a better chance. When?
Yeah.
Where? How? Mm-mm. Stop.
He doesn't.
Thank you. Thank you for... Look, this is what I'm talking about with front offices and ownership, admitting faults and going, hey, maybe we got this all wrong. And
well,
we
they were publicly shamed into it, I think.
Again, whatever the cause.
Because they named Flacco the starter and then were like, oh, crap. All right, I guess you were right.
Whatever the cause.
Yeah.
Doing that self-reflection and doing that evaluation and coming to the correct conclusion.
No doubt about it.
You love to see it.
We are just exiting week 11 in the NFL. Entering week 12, there are six dominant teams in the National Football League right now. There are six teams with a 97% or better chance of making the playoffs right now. They are the Lions, which have a 99% chance of making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The Philadelphia Eagles have a 97% chance of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then in the AFC, you've got four. The NFC's only got two, but it's the Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, and Texans, all with 97% chance or higher.
Oh.
You know what is the next one out?
Hmm.
The Chargers have a 91% chance of making the playoffs.
It has to be based on the remaining schedule.
It is, based on your remaining schedule. If they win this week, a win this week will bump them up to a 97% chance of making the playoffs. The Chargers this week have got...
I'm guessing it's somebody they're going up against in there.
The Ravens.
Yeah, there you go.
They've got the Ravens.
Yeah.
If they beat the Ravens...
You would knock them down
on Monday
spot.
Night, they've got a 97% chance of making the playoffs.
That'd be back-to-back AFC losses with a divisional loss for the Ravens.
Nelly.
It's a bit of a double whammy.
Six dominant teams in that seventh one that's lurking on the outside, a win this week... The Chargers
freaking
could enter that
Jim
conversation.
Harbaugh.
Best coach, man. Best coach in football.
Unbleeping believable. My last up, Eagles find their groove. And this has a lot more to do with, you know, who cares how badly they beat the Cowboys last week or even them beating a division rival in the Washington Commanders.
Mm.
It's coming out of that hellscape that was whatever coming out of camp with Sirianni, with Jalen Hurts, with all of the BS around that franchise.
Yep.
That all seems to have been minimized. You don't look, does Jalen Hurts look great?
Yeah.
No.
I think it's gonna rear its ugly head at some point though, you know?
I do too, but they've somehow found a way
to
just kind of get it done.
Just finding any way.
8-2 is 8-2, man.
It is talent. Talent winning out. But talent
look,
winning out.
We've seen talent in Cincinnati not win out.
Yep. Well, hey, that's a good transition because that's my first down, the Cincinnati Bengals and their struggles. It's not just that you lose games in the NFL. It is that you have quite possibly the top passer in the NFL, the leading receiver in the NFL, the leader in sacks in the NFL, and you are in a pit of abyss if you are the Cincinnati Bengals because your defense has let you down, your kicker has let you down. You are finding new and creative ways to lose games and grasp defeat out of the jaws of victory. Again, another one-possession loss. They one-possession loss against the Chargers, the Ravens, twice against the Ravens, the Commanders, the Chiefs, and the Patriots. They have six one-possession losses. They've lost seven games this year. That is a pit of misery that nobody wants to be in. Congratulations, Cincinnati Bengals.
You know, speaking of pits of misery, where do the San Francisco 49ers go from here?
Ooh.
They are now 5-5. They are at the bottom of the NFC West.
One game out of first.
That's the saving grace. But they're 1-3 in the division.
Yeah.
And here's their remaining schedule. At the Packers. Mm-hmm. At the Bills. Bears, Rams, at the Dolphins. Lions finish at the Cardinals. How many games are they winning in that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But you know what? If they win this week, you know what their playoff probability is?
Probably skyrockets.
50%.
Yeah.
If they lose, 18.
Because the
Packers, week alone.
Because the Packers are one of those teams, yeah. Because they're not going to win their division.
Yep.
They're going to be a wild card team.
Yep. Yep.
And that's what I mean. If you're the 49ers right now, this might break you.
Yeah.
If
no
you
doubt.
Lose this week, this might be the end of your season, which, you know, that chart that I talked about yesterday of coaches that in one score games.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan was towards the very bottom of that list.
Yeah. And a lot of those have been Super Bowls, dude. My second down, kickers. Remember how great kickers were at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, somebody gave them all ketamine.
Yeah, Chris Boswell had a hell of a week this week. He went 6-for-6. Big ups to him, Pittsburgh's kicker, because, I don't know, their offense couldn't score a touchdown against one of the worst defenses in the NFL.
Shut up being an outlier.
But outside of that, Brandon Aubrey of Dallas, one of two.
Here.
Evan McPherson,
oh no,
2-of-4. Jake Elliott. In Philly, 2-of-4. Justin Tucker, his demise is gone down so quickly. Automatic from 50 and in. He went 1-for-3, and he's missing PATs now. Josh Cardy in L.A., 0-for-1. Dustin Hopkins in Cleveland, 0-for-2 this week. It was a rough week for kickers after they were like the most impressive position group in the NFL the first like 6 weeks of the season.
Are you buying into the conspiracy?
What's that?
The manipulated K-balls?
No. What? I haven't even heard this.
Oh, you haven't seen this one?
We have K-ball drama?
Oh, yeah. There are some conspiracy theories that the NFL didn't like the juiced up scores and the K-balls.
Come on.
Hey. Remember in Major League Baseball,
juiced up scores? Scoring was a problem early in the year.
No, I should say the juiced up kicking numbers. Because remember, the first like 6 weeks of the season, everybody was hitting everything.
Roger Goodell's like, we need to hate kickers again.
Look, I'm just saying, it adds to the drama of the game. Look, remember, we brought on the guys that did the data on the baseball stuff last year. And kind of Bradford Davis and Meredith Willis. We talked to them last year about the juiced up balls in baseball and how weird that has been.
Now that we have that theory going around?
I think,
I don't know why they would want to hate kickers again. I thought like it wasn't bad for the game.
Well, I mean, it seems like hating kickers is a lot better than hating the players that continually get arrested.
I get, yeah, you know
Look
what?
Over
You're not
here.
Wrong. You're not wrong. We can hate kickers again.
Kickers don't matter.
Yeah, that may be a theory that I may subscribe to with Roger Goodell. All right, my third down, this one's going to be an easy one. Did you see after the Chargers win the love that was going around for J.K. Dobbins?
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for him. He should be comeback player of the year. 2016, broken fibula. 2021, torn ACL. 2021, torn LCL. Torn meniscus in 2021. Torn hamstring in 2021. Torn Achilles in 2023. And right now, he is having an incredible year. 726 yards, 8 touchdowns. He's playing really well. And he's 25 years old. He's still really young, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying comeback player of the year. My down is that, no, it's going to go to some stupid quarterback who plays good for 5 weeks. Joe Flacco, everybody. Damar Hamlin died, and Joe Flacco won comeback player of the year.
What about Ricky Pearsall?
He got shot.
He got shot. Like
he got shot.
Got shot.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to be on the short list.
Yes. And this is why I'm saying my down is that J.K. Dobbins is going to get this ripped from him. It's because some old quarterback plays pretty okay
over the next 5 weeks.
Yeah, and then he'll lose.
Cooper Rush?
No, after what we saw last night, it definitely won't be Cooper Rush.
What if he just leads them Cowboys? gets them to 9-8.
Yeah, this should be Ricky Pearsall or
JK.
Or JK. I mean, if Ricky Pearsall becomes like a leading receiver for a team that is like they have a 31% chance of winning, making the playoffs right now, and they go and make playoffs. Yeah, go ahead, Ricky Pearsall. He got shot.
I mean, not only did he get shot, we saw him like walking to the ambulance, like leaking like a sieve.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right.
If you're putting a visual in front of the judges, that's going to win out over all of J.K. Dobbins' MRIs.
Yeah, his just body falling apart.
Look, I sympathize with him.
Yeah.
My last down, it's going to be a repeat of last week. No. Now the Cowboys have hit rock bottom. last week was supposed... Now the Cowboys have hit rock bottom.
Well, yeah, because the roof is falling apart. They're kingdoming that son of a gun.
Our pets' heads are falling off. That's where we reached with the Cowboys.
Yeah. Oh, poor Jerry Jones. Feel bad for him.
I don't.
I don't at all.
Don't know.
Who feels bad for Jerry Jones?
You shouldn't.
His interview on the Fan down in Dallas is going to be something.
Mwah! All right, that's it.
We'll get you fired.
Three up, three down. Three things we like, three things we didn't. Coming out of the NFL weekend that was. Coming up next. No, seriously, the Oregon Ducks have clinched a spot in the Big Ten Championship game. We'll get to that and more. Why it's a little bit weird around this on Danny and Dusty today, the Fan. Get a little good microphone. Had to do a quick hot swap during the break, and now we're good to go. Speaking of hot swaps, the Oregon Ducks, they were, they weren't, they are, they are, they are. They're now confirmed to be in the Big Ten Championship game, no matter what, through, because no matter what the scenario is, they will either be the one or the two seed in the Big Ten, no matter what.
Yeah, the tiebreaker scenarios in the Big Ten are convoluted and it's a mess because of the fact you don't have divisions anymore and you have 18-team conferences, right? So the Big Ten, apparently over the last 2 days, we're crunching the numbers on what all of the scenarios would look like for who could play in the Big Ten championship game. With now two games remaining in the regular season for most teams, one game for Oregon, they have been able to go through. There's 10 scenarios that could play out between Oregon, Indiana, Ohio State, and Penn State to see who plays in the conference championship game. And because Oregon won at Wisconsin, as we all thought, but there wasn't a concrete definitive answer from the conference, no matter what happens with the Washington game, Oregon will play in the Big Ten championship.
Yes, there is no machination in which Oregon will not be one or two.
Yeah, and it all depends on if Oregon, obviously, if they win against Washington after the bye week, they will be the one seed, mm-hmm. No ands, ifs, or buts about it.
Where it gets dicey is the Indiana-Ohio State game.
Yeah, and if Indiana wins that game, Oregon, in all likelihood right now, would be still be the one seed because mm-hmm. then it goes to your conference opponent's record, okay? And Oregon, as it stands right now, would have an advantage in that.
Yeah.
But the scenarios would be if Indiana, Oregon wins out, obviously we know it would be Oregon and Indiana, right? And that would mean Penn State would finish third in the conference. Ohio State would finish fourth because Indiana would hand Ohio State their second conference loss.
Otherwise known as Ryan Day gets fired.
Ryan Day would get fired.
On that note, if Indiana beats Ohio State this weekend, mm-hmm. does Ryan Day get fired on the spot? Does he make it until Monday?
Mm-mm. No, they wouldn't fire him. They're not going to fire him.
You don't think so?
No. If they lose to Indiana and Michigan, yeah, he gets fired. If they lose to Indiana, he beats Michigan, and they make the playoff and they win a playoff game, oof. He's not getting fired.
You don't think so?
No.
Oof.
Nope. This is where it starts to get interesting, though. Okay? What if Ohio State beats Indiana and then loses to Michigan? It then comes down to Indiana and Penn State. Okay? If Oregon wins and
that's the most hilarious possible outcome.
So Oregon would earn the outright berth if they beat Washington, and they would be the one seed. The two seed would be determined by the highest cumulative conference winning percentage of all conference opponents at the end of the season for Indiana and Penn State. Because Ohio State would be out with two conference losses. Right? But they would have, but Ohio State would have wins over Indiana and Penn State and still be at home because their two losses would be to Michigan and Oregon. Okay. I think one of the more interesting scenarios that could play out here is say Oregon wins and then you have 3 one-loss teams, which is probably the most likely scenario, right? Mm-hmm. Oregon and Ohio State would play because Ohio State would have two wins over Indiana and Penn State mm-hmm. head-to-head. But where it gets a little bit dicey is there is a scenario where was I? I think it was out of these 10, it's crazy. The Indiana, Oregon, Penn State all finish 8-1 Ohio State loses to Indiana. Indiana and Oregon would win bursts due to common opponent ranked highest in the standings.
Which would be Ohio State.
Which would be Ohio State. Penn State would be at home because they lost.
It's all so dumb.
Yeah, I don't know how this, I have no idea. It's all shenanigans right now. But there's only one scenario in which Penn State goes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It would be scenario 10 here. Oregon finishes 9-0 and 8-1. Yeah. Penn State finishes 8-1. And that's if Indiana loses to Ohio State and Purdue, and Ohio State loses to Michigan. Oregon and Penn State would be the two teams in the Big Ten championship. Only one includes Penn State. Ohio State is in four of them. And then you have Purdue in the other four, or Indiana in the other four. So it's Indiana or Ohio State.
Yeah.
That's what we're coming down to. And really, it comes down to this game. This game this week, Indiana, Ohio State, it comes down to this game. The winner of this game will be playing in the Big Ten championship
unless
game.
Ohio State wins and loses to Michigan, which won't happen. But
I mean, it's at Ohio State this year. Michigan is inept offensively. You can't beat a team of Ohio State's caliber with one hand tied behind your back. That's the same thing as Oregon. Oregon did not play their A game. They still won.
I would like to see it.
I would love to see it. I'm an agent of chaos. These are the things I want. These are the things I love. But Oregon is in no matter what happens. And that goes back to what we talked about hour number one with Tez Johnson. He's back. I don't know how back he'll be because of the fact you will be in Indianapolis no matter what. No, because I think there's a really high chance that you could see it for a third time. Like, I'd love the rematch to be in a college football playoff, not in a Big Ten championship game. Like, I like seeing, I would love to see two undefeateds, Oregon and Indiana, playing for a bye. The other one will likely be the 5 seed in the college football playoff. And how crazy that could get as well. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, then you would have, if Indiana beats Ohio State, you'd have an Ohio State team that's a 2-loss team, and their 2 losses would be to two of the, it would be 1-2 in the country.
Yeah, because if Indiana wins that game, they're going to 2 or 3.
And where do you put them in the 12-team playoff? Because you're not going to put them at 5, because whoever loses the Big Ten championship game is going to be the 5 seed.
Put them at 10.
You're not going to be at 6. Because the loser of the SEC title game will probably be at 6. So they're going to be like a 7 or 8 seed because you got to give them a home field because they're 2 losses. If they lose to Indiana tight, like a 1-possession game or a field goal, right? Mm-hmm. If they lose by a field goal to Indiana, they would lose to number 1 and number 2 by a combined 4 points.
Games in Indiana?
Nope. It's at Ohio State. Yep. It's at Ohio State.
You lose at home, though. It's looked at differently.
What if the loss at home, Will Howard gets dinged up, and it's not like a long-term injury? Like, he sprains his ankle.
Mm.
And he would be totally fine, totally okay.
We're basically talking like Bo Nix, Washington.
Yeah. Yeah. He sprains his ankle. You're like, he's going to be fine. By the time we get to the college football playoff, it's a nothing burger. He'll be okay.
But that was basically the reason they couldn't come.
That's the reason why they couldn't do it. I love this.
Yeah, I know. This is fun. Like, again, this is why we wanted the 12-team playoff for so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of all of the different doors and moments that it opens up, right?
Yep. The sliding doors that could be. And then watching the SEC meltdown over the worthiness of Ohio State versus
or Indiana
versus any of the other teams and being like, no, we should host. Mm-hmm. The Big Ten doesn't deserve, like that would be amazing.
Well, let's get to that. Let's get to some of the sliding doors moments. We've got Mike Elko, we've got Kenny Dillingham, and we've got Tommy Tuberville.
Oh, God.
All over the place talking college football playoff, and what matters and what doesn't. That and more. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with a Sports Center update.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
All right, we're going to do a little dealer's choice here. You want to go with some Elko, you want to go with some Dilly, or you want to go with some Tuberville?
We can wait for Dilly to the end.
Okay.
We'll play Dilly at the end because Kenny Dillingham's becoming a favorite of mine.
He's quite high up there. You know what? Let's go with some Tommy Tuberville.
All right.
Because we were just talking about Indiana. And Tommy Tuberville has made the transition, the very normal transition from college athletics to the Capitol Hill.
Yeah, to the Senate.
Which, you know.
As a senator in Alabama.
That's kind of a thing that you do, right? Mm-hmm. Well, he's saying that they need to put a stranglehold around NIL to keep what's happening in Indiana from happening.
Yeah, this is, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, we do need standardization to the name, image, and likeness. Because when it is state to state and it is so wildly different from one place to the other, it causes chaos, right? And I think if you had a standardized format for NIL that every school in the country had to adhere to and it applied to everybody, it would be different. I mean, the rules that the NCAA has put in place is like, we don't really know what to do with it. I think what Tommy Tuberville is doing, though, he is basically being the SEC mouthpiece in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because
where'd he coach?
Auburn and Cincinnati and Texas Tech, mm-hmm. right? But he is a senator in the state of Alabama, right? He said, it takes a different mentality coaching because you don't just build a team. You pretty much buy a team now. And that was a little bit forbidden when I was coaching. No, it wasn't. But now it's legal. Look at Indiana. They went out and they bought a football team, and look where they're at. 10-0, ranked 5th in the country. Does he even know what Indiana has done and how they built this team?
Yeah, they did buy a team in the sense of they bought them from James Madison and Ohio University, you know, as opposed to, Alabama buying them directly out of the recruiting services, like
under table with no taxes being paid on any of the money.
Yeah.
And look, 14 of the 31 players that they brought in from the transfer portal at Indiana were 0 to 2-star recruits.
This isn't mercenary hunting.
No. 25 of their 31 players were from the group of 5 or lower.
Mm-hmm.
What Indiana's doing is not like the poster child for NIL being wrong
college football. This is Boise State on steroids. Let's take all the chip on their shoulder guys that fit a style and a type that we think we can do something with, but also we've got Mark Cuban money.
Yeah.
Like that. For those that don't know, Indiana's
that's where
Mark Cuban alum.
Yep.
So.
I think this is so dumb because he didn't bring up any of the SEC schools.
He didn't
bring up Ohio State or Oregon, which are, you know, two of the rumored to be. And that's the other thing, too, is that we have no idea what these schools are spending on NIL. Like, we have an idea, but you still don't know exactly what schools are paying. And there's a lot of schools that went to the NIL route, and they haven't had the success for them. But I do agree, though, that there should be some sort of leveling of NIL and everybody playing by the same rules under NIL.
Which
I
do agree with that. It seems like we're heading towards a sort of quasi-salary cap with the new court ruling.
Well, yeah, there was, and also the Ross Dellinger article that he put out, I think it was last week, where he just basically laid it out that there are some schools, because we did have the early signing period for all the other sports except for football. This was what Dellinger said. This week, schools are distributing to recruits NIL contracts with guaranteed salaries and even buyouts. That's where we're going. The House settlement ruling that is going to be finalized in April is basically laying the groundwork for this is going to be something that it starts at within the university. They can negotiate those contracts. At that point, I think what college sports needs to do is wait until the roof falls off of the NCAA, mm-hmm. and the power conferences or the group of four or power four and group of five say, we're not going to play by the same set of rules. We are different than everybody else.
Yep.
And then at that point you go, all right, since you guys have separated yourself from the NCAA, now we have the standardization. Right now, it does nothing
it's
except for muddy the water.
Yeah.
No, it muddies the waters if you put a federal legislation in front of it, because that's what we want, is we want the government on top of this. No, now that the NCAA is truly at a crossroads and at a portion, this is where it's been different before. Like, if the NCAA was operating as normal and with the power that they once had, then yeah, you should say, yeah, let's have federal legislation for it. The NCAA is falling apart. Like, we see it crumbling in front of us. Just wait. Pump the brakes on this. Instead, Tommy Tuberville's doing the SEC's work as his mouthpiece.
The woe is me part of this from yeah. constituents back home.
I mean, come on.
This sounds like a job for the Doge.
Oh, yeah.
The Department of Government Efficiency.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah.
Because government and efficiency go hand in hand.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to keep it in the old SEC? You want to do some Mike Elko?
Dude, Mike Elko, he stepped in it
Oops.
Today. They've got Auburn this week. Then they got
Which,
Texas.
If you're not familiar, they suck.
Winner of Texas and Texas A&M goes to the SEC title game. But if Texas A&M loses, then all of a sudden, that game, it is truly a cluster you-know-what in the SEC. A&M controls their own destiny to the SEC title game, and he was asked about it today.
I don't think it's an issue. I think when you're in the situation we're in, it's easy to focus on the task at hand. You know, I think, those big games earlier in the year, you know, maybe you look ahead. If we didn't have at stake, what's at stake? Maybe you would worry about it. I think our focus is single-handedly on Texas. Or, I mean, on Auburn right now, and locked in on what we got to get done.
No, we're not overlooking Auburn. No, we got to take this one day at a time. There's huge ramifications. Our sights are solely set on Texas. I mean Auburn.
Oops.
I wish everybody would have seen his face, because it felt like the mic cut out. And I was like, oh, clip's over. And he was just paused. And then he looked around like, oh, no, I just did that.
And he probably didn't mean to.
Auburn. It was Auburn by a tutty.
It was a slip.
Auburn by a tutty.
But if you don't think that thing's getting replayed in the locker room like a freaking remix, you're out of your mind.
How great is that?
Auburn just
I feel
said,
for Mike Elko.
Thank you.
I love Mike Elko too. He's in right now Texas A&M. Anybody want to guess the line? Texas A&M Auburn. On the road.
At
Jordan-Hare.
What's Auburn's record right now?
They are 4-6, 1-5 in SEC play.
10.5.
A&M 10.5, huh? BT Dubs, the one game in conference play they have won mm-hmm. is Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Texas A&M, 2.5-point favorites.
That's it, huh? What did it open at?
Oh, I don't know about that.
But if it's 2.5 now, there's no way it could have been bet down that much. 4.5? 5.5? 4.5, 5.5?
I mean, you're not going to see 8 points.
No. I would have thought that would have been a bigger line, to be honest.
Let's see.
I'm usually pretty close on those. I'm surprised in that.
Yeah, 10.5 is quite far off from 2.5. Yeah, I don't see where the opening line is. I'll have to go find
that. We'll find that one on break.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an interesting one. All right, we'll wrap up today's show with the blissfully unaware Kenny Dillingham. And I mean in the most, like, positive manner as one can. So we'll get to that here to close up today's show. I'm Danny Dusty, Tenny the Fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan. The inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers. Brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
Portland Trail Blazers are getting ready to hit the road tomorrow afternoon, where they will take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Trail Blazers are fresh off or continuing on a 3-game winning streak. Unclear if Anthony Simons and or DeAndre Ayton will be ready to go. Matisse Thybulle still on the injury report. There hasn't been a given update on him. I talked to Matisse. Oh, gosh. Sunday? He's moving around. He's getting through some stuff, but he's still dealing with some swelling due to some treatment that he's taken on that knee. So I don't know if he'll make it back on this trip, but wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden he started eking his way towards that way. Donovan Clingan will continue starting in the place of DeAndre Ayton as it sits right now. Robert Williams III still limited on back-to-backs, of which the Portland Trailblazers will have against the Houston Rockets, where the front game of that stretch will be the Cup game, Game 2 of the Cup Series for the Portland Trailblazers. This Trailblazers Report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15 and Broadway at AztecWillies.com. All right, as we wrap up today's show, it's time for our now seemingly daily Kenny Dillingham inspirational quote.
He's great. He is awesome.
All vibes, baby.
And now he's asking, he was asked about the tiebreaker scenarios in the Big 12. Because
apparently they come into play in everybody's conference.
We just went through the 10 of the Big 10. The SEC could have, I think it's now down after last weekend's results, you could have a six-way tie to get into the SEC championship game. Big 12 is out of control as well, but they do have a shot. And here's Kenny Dillingham's take on it.
Oh, I have no clue. I literally have no. Somebody was telling me if we win and somebody else loses, and then like ranch dressing falls on a wing. I don't really know. It just play the very best you can play, prepare the very best you can prepare, and like I told the guys last week in my leadership council meeting, like don't get lost in the sauce. Like just be the very best we can be over and over again, and wherever we end up is the best we could have ever done. That's it. Like, you can wish and hope, but if you just play the very best you can play and prepare the very best you can prepare, then regardless of what happens, it's the very maximum you could have ever achieved anyways. So what else do you want? So I have no clue the tiebreaker. Some of the players probably do. I couldn't even tell you.
I love Kenny Dillingham.
Fantastic.
He is.
It doesn't feel fake. It's corny and goofy as it all sounds. It sounds authentic.
It's genuine. And look, there's a lot of people that when he was like hired as Oregon's offensive coordinator, I know a lot of coaches that went down and like they went and they watched, you know, because that's one thing that's pretty typical is during spring ball, high school coaches can go down and they can watch. And they were like, yeah, Dillingham is a ball of energy, but he seems at times like he can be a little hitting moving targets left and right, right? Like he's kind of all over the place. And they're like, I don't know, because you get so used to guys like Chip Kelly or, you know, Mark Helfrich, mm-hmm. who are just attention to detail, dialed in type people, mm-hmm. right? And then you get a Kenny Dillingham, who's a very creative mind type person. And you're like, that is not normal for a football coach.
It's a little bit of a beautiful mind situation.
But it is exactly what makes him successful as mm-hmm. a leader of young people now. Like, that's an antiquated way of thinking, is that you've got to be always buttoned up, dialed in all the time. It's like, no, when it's time to work, it's time to work. But you have to have that relatability, and you can see why he relates to his players, why his players absolutely freaking love the guy.
You have to have the, and this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but I don't mean it as that, but you have to have the ability to kind of go like TikTok.
Yeah.
You have to have the ability like to just like turn your brain off and be normal.
Be human and relatable, right? Yeah. And that's why like you hear guys like and Dillingham has that, you know, he's smart.
Yeah.
You know he knows ball.
Yes.
But the young coaches now, whether it's Lanning or whether it's Dillingham, the way that they have the ability to connect with their players, it's what's separating them mm-hmm. from the older regimes of coaching.
Yes.
In the older style of coaching. And you have to have that ability now, because that's what attracts players and what's going to want them to stick around, because kids are different now.
Yeah.
Like what connects to them is different. What everybody can sell the idea of going and playing in the NFL, mm-hmm. right? But you hear from both of those guys, and he mentioned it in there, when I met with my leadership council, everything that these guys do that are kind of, and look, Dillingham and Lanning coach together, obviously, but it's all about the connectedness,
it's
right?
Bringing guys with them.
And bringing everybody kind of more together mm-hmm. instead of just do your damn job and
shut up and dribble, basically.
Be really good at football. It's no mistake why a lot of these programs are having the success that they're having. And it's not for everybody, but they're pulling off the guys that are buying into
that. Does Dillingham wake the sleeping giant?
Of Arizona State?
Mm.
Ooh. I hope he has success, man. I really do.
It's even cooler for him because it's home.
Yeah. It's where he went to school, mm-hmm. where he grew up. Yeah, it's awesome. But they got a big one. If they can knock off BYU this week and Arizona next week, they're going to the Big 12 championship game. It's Big 12.
That'd be awesome. Upset of the year.
That'd be great. That would be great. All right, that does it for us today. We will see you on a Wednesday. Coming up next, it's 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Primetime with Isaac and Sook. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Bye.